Hey everyone, if you like this podcast, go behind the paywall to get privileged access to the smartest minds in finance. Visit realvision.com/RVpod and use the promo code podcast10, that's podcast10, to get 10% off our essential membership for the first year. Join the Real Vision community and learn how to become a better investor. And now to the top analysis of today's markets.
Are the bulls and bears both screwed? Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. With me today is Darius Dale, founder of 42 Macro. Hi, Darius.
Hey, Maggie. It's a pleasure to be here. How are you?
Great to see you. And we're asking that question specifically for you because you tweeted last Friday and it caught our eye. And you are worried that both the bulls and the bears may be at risk here. Walk us through what your thinking is.
Yeah. So it really starts with, you know, kind of where market positioning and market consensus are. If you look at the bond market, particularly short-term, you know, forward rate spreads, whether you look at the Fed's near-term forward spread or you look at other forward spreads, whether it be the 12-month forward, you know, T-bill minus the spot T-bill yield, they're pricing in a very significant amount of Fed easing over the next, you know, 12 to 18 months. And if you look at Fed funds futures, that easing is likely to start, or at least what's currently priced into the market, in November of this year. That's actually changed since September over the last week or so. And so what we're looking at in terms of both liquidity and factors in the real economy could actually see some of that pricing, you know, kind of come out of the market in terms of bond market volatility in the coming months, at least coming up with a couple of quarters before we get into the kind of recessionary phase of this business cycle. So I have a couple charts that I'd like to share with that on that topic. First chart, Brian, if you can throw that up, where we show the U.S. consumer looking at the PCE report. In the top panel, we show real personal consumption expenditures, which are 70% of the U.S. economy, are growing and compounding on a three-month annualized basis at 4.3%. Now, that's basically double the pre-COVID trend. No one's talking about this because everyone keeps talking about recession, but you're seeing housing data pick up in recent months. Obviously, the consumer's been remaining resilient because we have a significant amount of real income growth. That's at 7.6% in terms of disposable personal income. So we do have a consumer, resilient consumer. But the issue as it relates to the bond market is slide two, Brian, if you get that up on the screen, where I circled the top panel and the bottom panel. We got core CPI still compounding at 5% on a three-month annualized basis. But more importantly than compounding at 5% is the fact that it is in the same place that it was 5 months ago. So we have a lot of disinflation on a year-over-year basis, but that disinflation is going to stop in the coming months if we don't start to see these sequential time series break down. And at the bottom panel in that chart there, we show super core CPI compounding at 4%. That's 4.1%. That's twice the Fed's preferred target, and it's in the same place that we were 4 months ago. So I'm not sure we're out of the woods from the perspective of bond market volatility, purely from the perspective of the recession being delayed relative to kind of investor consensus.
Yeah, I want to get to why. So that's why the bears are potentially in trouble. Yeah. But I want to get to the bulls. But just before that, I want to bring up something that we got a comment right before we came on from Jim saying, and we asked him to clarify, but he's saying, doesn't anybody remember the Fed said that they wanted inflation for longer to make up the period where they couldn't get it to 2%? And that's true, but did they want this kind of inflation? I don't think so, right? Like they wanted sort of trend inflation, not disinflation, but this is way above what they're comfortable with, isn't it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, they scrapped their average inflation target, which is what the viewers kind of alluding to back in the fall of 2021. If you hear the price stability target, their target is 2%. They have not said anything about an average of 2% really since the fall of 2021. So I don't believe that the Fed is operating under that framework. That was the kind of maximum and inclusive employment framework, you know, the average inflation targeting framework when they thought inflation was transitory. I don't think anyone at the FOMC thinks inflation is transitory at this particular juncture. So I don't think that we have to worry about that as investors. But there are a lot of other things we need to worry about.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, if anyone wants to hear, for those of you who missed it, Fridays are tough. We had an extended with Dennis Lockhart, who was the former Atlanta Fed president, sat around a lot of Fed meetings. He had some really, really interesting things to say. Fed officials are usually really kind of closed up, and he is former, but he was very interesting in talking about the thinking, and he talked about kind of that recency bias from when they were stuck in that environment where they couldn't get inflation to move and, you know, having to adjust to the prospect that maybe they're in a a new macro regime. And, you know, they're just like everyone else, right, trying to figure it out. Very interesting kind of digging into to all of that. I mean, we did an extended with them. So if you missed it or if you weren't able to stay for the extended, you know, hop on that QR code and you can get on and see it. Because I think it was really some really interesting nuggets in there. But Darius, okay, so back to your thesis. So bears are stuck. What's the problem with bulls? Why are they at risk?
Well, so the problem with bulls is just the time decay of this bearish positioning. Obviously, if you look at dispersion within the equity market, we're actually getting some pretty negative signals that we spoke about in our lead-off morning note this morning. But dispersion within the equity market has been trading or trending very negatively as it ever has, you know, if you look at the time series over the last kind of 25, 30 years. And so that implies that you have a buy-side consensus that is very grossly exposed to the market. They're really long, their longs, and they're very short, their shorts, and they have a lot of gross exposure in the market. And that's based on, you know, this kind of negative economy recession view. And so you kind of roll the clock forward. If we don't go into a recession, you know, over the near term, which many investors think, if you look at Bloomberg consensus estimates, you know, they're calling for the first quarter of negative GDP in the second quarter of this year. You look at bottom-up analyst estimates. In fact, Ryan, that's slide four. We put up a slide four where we show S&P 500 analyst estimates at the bottom left of that chart where sales and earnings growth, they're looking for -8% earnings, negative earnings growth in the second quarter of this year. Now, what if it comes in at, you know, -2 or -3, which is kind of where it's been at over the past couple of quarters? And so you could easily see, you know, a very big convergence trade kind of snap into those investors. But ultimately, what tends to happen late in the bull market cycle, or this is definitely not a bull market, what tends to happen late in the business cycle is that one by one investors have to capitulate to the realization that the recession hasn't started. I mean, you and I have been talking on this program about the potentiality of a recession since going back a year ago. Mm-hmm. And the yield curve inverted, you know, back in October, if you look at 10-year 3-month, or back in June, if you look at 10-year 2-year. So it's been quite a while for a lot of investors to be running around talking about recession. But guess what? I just said the economy is doing, you know, I wouldn't say just fine, but it's hanging in there, and it's likely to continue hanging in there, according to our business cycle timing models, until you get into the fourth quarter, or maybe even as late as the first quarter of next year. So you roll the clock forward. That's the same problem that happened in October 2007. It's the same problem that happened to bears in September of 2000, which is you just capitulate because it's not happening soon enough. Mm. And they always capitulate at the right or wrong time. So I could easily see a lot of bond market and stock market volatility in the third quarter, you know, for liquidity cycle reasons, that could easily rotate it back into kind of a blow off top into the early part of the fourth quarter because bears are just capitulating. And then that's when the movie's likely to start.
So basically the timing is screwing everybody because the bears, it'll be delayed enough for the bulls to think they're right and the bears, yep, will throw in the hat. And exactly when the bulls are convinced they're right, it'll happen. The bears have already got out of the trade and the bulls will be stuck in it because they think it's a soft landing.
100%. I mean, go back to that chart that I just put up, slide four. Look at the farthest right candles on that chart. The blue lines represent S&P 500 earnings growth. Bottom-up analyst consensus is calling for earnings growth of +9% in both Q4 of this year and Q1 of next year. Now, that very much rhymes with the view that sell-side consensus had coming into 2023, which is recession first half, recovery second half. Recession first half, recovery second half. Well, if we don't have a recession in the first half, the recession does not start in the third quarter, we're going to be talking, at least a lot of investors are going to be looking around and saying, maybe that was it. Fed's paused. Time to go, time to get long. And that's exactly the right, in our opinion, that'll be the exact wrong opportunity to get long.
There's always a couple of things that complicate this, aren't there? And one of them is that things are different this time. And we do have this enormous wave of AI. And just today, there were reports out that hedge fund giant Stevie Cohen made comments at a private dinner that he's pretty bullish about the market because of everything AI is going to unleash. I mean, we're also hearing from voices who say it might wipe out mankind, but another thing for us to worry about. But, you know, you do have this sense that, and you've seen it, NVIDIA, Microsoft, I mean, it's super narrow, but you can see the money sort of piling into that. It makes it hard to figure out whether you can kind of trust some of the others. So how are you thinking about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, I think we'll... You know, this is something I don't think this time is different. There are, you know, bulls and bears operating financial markets being driven by fear and greed, and the cycle is going to continue the cycle. Obviously, there's different things in each cycle, but in my opinion, AI is no different than the internet. I mean, put up slide five, Brian, where we debunk one of the myths that everybody's bearish. Well, if you look at the second panel in this chart on slide five, we're showing household allocation to stocks as a percent of their total assets. And that's at 31%, down from a peak of 36% in the middle of 2021. That 31% is just shy of the all-time bubble.com high that we saw back in 2000. And so, you know, the internet was this awesome thing back in 2000, and everyone was spending, from a corporate perspective, as much money as possible to kind of leverage that that opportunity. But that didn't stop the market from getting cut in half. And so, in my opinion, you know, just because you have a fundamental tailwind, if it meets the wrong part of the macro cycle, particularly if it meets the wrong part of the liquidity cycle, which I very much think it will in the third quarter and in the first half of next year, you're going to have it's going to be a lot of questions to answer about, you know, where this AI stuff is coming from.
Hey, everyone, we're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Darius, that was a very painful truth you just laid on us there, because if you think about that, I mean, it is true if you look back. And by the way, that did lay the groundwork for like enormous societal changes. But you're right, like in that can be a lot of froth, especially when people are trying to sort of just throwing money where they're not sure what's going to work, or they're not sure if there's going to be, you know, a standard or a winner. I mean, this is what we're all talking about all the time. So it's scary, but really excellent point to bring up that comparison to 2000. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking a lot more about that, I suspect. The other thing that comes up all the time, and we're going to play a clip from an interview, because this is the other sort of argument I think that comes up. So Harry Melandri spoke with Tom Kadic, managing director at Ned Group Investments, in the latest installment of The Next Big Trade. Now, they were talking all about commercial real estate, but Tom did sort of discuss his overall macro outlook. Let's have a listen to that, and we'll talk on the other side.
Your view has to be built on some kind of broader macro view about the likely recession risks we're facing and the intensity and duration of any of the coming recession, or if there is even a recession. Mm-hmm. Because obviously if the Fed rate raises rates some more, you might not necessarily be so bullish of real estate. And also if recession is sufficiently intense, that could also put you off real estate as well. So what sort of recession risks have you built into that view?
So our base case is that we've already seen peaking inflation, certainly in the US. We're starting to see peak inflation in UK and Europe, and that we will continue to see a slowing but continued upward cycle in terms of base rates, but that is slowing, and we will start to see that moderate and move to a more dovish or more accommodative environment from central banks. So looking towards the end of this year to start to see evidence of that. So clearly some continued headwinds, but that's a lot of that is already priced in.
Sure.
You know, you just need to look at the yield curve to see that.
Just that's a little snippet of what was a really interesting conversation about commercial real estate. I know a lot of you have been asking about that. So if you're interested to see what Tom's big trade idea is around that, you can go check out the full interview on our platform. If you're not already a member, scan the QR code so you can hear all of the episodes of The Next Big Trade. We love that show. So Darius, so when he said that, this is sort of reminded me of what we hear a lot. And that's okay, there's going to be a recession, but you know, most of the bad news is already telegraphed. You know, the market's a forward, you know, discounting mechanism. A lot of the bad news is already priced in. What do you think about that? Do we need to be, you know, is the timing issue going to create a problem with that idea?
So it's one, I would disagree with the view that markets are forward looking. I think we've back tested asset markets as well as anyone on the sell side. And I say that very politely. And when we construct those back tests, you know, we're looking at very sophisticated, you know, statistics like expected returns, Sharpe ratios, covariance, all that stuff. What you really quickly find is that back the markets aren't really look more than kind of 2 to 3 months ahead.
Yeah.
Once you get into the 4 to 5 months ahead timeframe, there is almost no correlation between the market and things that you would think to drive markets like earnings, GDP growth.
Thank you for that, because I always feel like it's more reactive than predictive. But
it's much more reactive. And the reason why, Maggie, if you throw up slide six, it's particularly in the post-crisis era. I would argue markets are probably a lot more forward-looking prior to the GFC. Mm. But post-GFC, liquidity has been the dominant driver. Rao's been all over this in recent months in terms of talking about his model. When this chart here on slide six, we show our global liquidity proxy, which is the sum of the G6 central banks, the G6 economy, or the largest six economies in their narrow money supply, as well as world FX reserves minus gold. And that sum of that, and that blue line, that sum of those three factors has a 0.94 R squared to global equity market cap and a 0.95 R squared to the S&P over the since 2009. And so it's, if you're telling me that markets are forward looking, you're basically saying that liquidity is not the driver of markets, which, you know, I think you'd have to exit, most rooms on the buy side when you make those kinds of comments. But one thing I would call out, particularly in terms of the headline of this chart, which is, you know, there's been a lot of talk around on Twitter and in the kind of financial ecosystem about kind of global liquidity and how it's been improving and it's going to continue to improve. And that's really got a lot of people trapped at 31,000 in Bitcoin, got a lot of folks trapped at 4,200 in S&P terms, in our opinion, because the improvement in the global liquidity cycle has not been linear. As you can see in those max drawdown studies, middle panel and the bottom panel of this chart, the recovery in asset markets, which is the bottom panel of the S&P, the recovery in the S&P off the October lows has been somewhat linear. At least it's thawed out in the last couple of months, but the improvement in global liquidity has very much not been linear. And that kind of scares me, because if you look at the next chart, Brian, where we layer on you know, world equity market cap in the red line, and we layer on Bitcoin, both in price terms, in that same analysis, in those bottom three panels, we show trailing 1 year Z-scores for each of the global liquidity proxy for world market cap and for Bitcoin, and global liquidity proxy is still trading at a minus 0.6 sigma, whereas world equity market cap's up here at a plus one, Bitcoin's at a plus one sigma. So they kind of ran up like the recovery in global liquidity was linear, but the recovery in global liquidity is not linear, and it's going to get increasingly not linear once we get into the third quarter or whenever we get past these debt ceiling negotiations. I can unpack that as well.
Yeah, we certainly want to, because we have questions about both. But let me bring one in that is related to Bitcoin, since you're mentioning it. Miguel asking, does Darius still see Bitcoin at 10K in the short term?
10K? No, that's not.
Yeah, I don't know where.
That
where
is not a from. That's not a comment I've made ever.
So are you suggesting with the liquidity that it's going to be volatile? I mean, how are you seeing that?
I mean, we've probably seen the year-to-date highs. I mean, maybe not the year-to-date highs, but certainly I think we've seen a high for a little while now. I mean, Bitcoin and Ethereum actually just broke to neutral from bullish in terms of our volatility, just a momentum signal this morning. So I would call that out. If you're long Bitcoin, you know, you're probably going to be walking into an environment with a lot more volatility than we experienced in recent months. Number two, just in terms of like this concept of liquidity, there's a lot of stuff going on. We've talked about this in the most recent Real Vision of the Bitcoin I was on a couple of weeks ago. But when you pass the debt ceiling, so clearly there's potentiality for a negative market event into the debt ceiling. The closer we get, the more likely we're going to see something that looks like 2011. I think we can all agree on that. I think the bigger, more structural overhang for asset markets on the other side of the debt ceiling are twofold. One, we got to take the Treasury general account balance from zero to $600 billion, or at least that's what the Treasury has outlined for the end of the end of September or quarter. And then number two, that we're going to return to net coupon issuance. It's going to go from basically zero to something greater than zero, which means quantitative tightening, which has not been draining bank reserves over the past 6 months, is going to start draining bank reserves again. Mm. And so in our opinion, you're dealing with a negative liquidity situation in the U.S. that suggests that the dollar could actually start the bottom and rise again, which would obviously be a tertiary headwind to global liquidity as well. So the liquidity backdrop in the third quarter is actually quite poor. You could see asset markets trading like much like they did in 2022, which is stocks down, bonds down. But ultimately, if the recession is as delayed as I think it's likely to be, which is Q4, maybe even Q1 of next year, then you could probably recover from those levels. If we're wrong on the timing of recession and it's, you know, Q3 or Q4 of this year, then I think you could easily go from a negative liquidity environment causing volatility in asset markets to a negative economic environment causing capitulation in asset markets.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Wow. I think that we are going to have to start turning the daily briefing into happy hour, because we might need some fortification for some of these. But information is power, right? Yeah. And offense is the best defense. And maybe there's another one I can think of. But we need to be thinking about this, because as you pointed out earlier, a lot of this is not priced in, and that should make us all a little bit nervous. So let's get to the debt ceiling. Some questions about that. Scott is saying, how do you feel about longer duration bonds in the context of the debt ceiling?
So our weather model, which is a pretty sophisticated dynamic factor model that guides our asset allocation process, is currently bearish on bonds. Liquidity is quite poor. There are a variety of other metrics in that system that's causing the bond signal to be negative, not the least of which is the fact that investors are actually short rates by an extreme degree. And historically, being short rates has historically been led to negative ex-ante returns in the bond market. So I don't know that it's a good idea to be getting max long of bonds here. Now, we've seen a pretty nasty backup in yields over the past couple of weeks, you know, basically 20 basis points over the past couple of weeks. So if you're trying to play allocate to the recession playbook, or more importantly, if you're coming from a, I didn't believe the recession is likely to, I now believe Darius, and it's probably going to start in 6 or 9 months, then I do need to start dipping my toe in on bonds on dips. But from the perspective of our forward-looking models, which are, you know, trying to manage the medium term between now and then, I don't think this is the time to be, you know, max long bonds, because again, you're getting net coupon issuance, you're getting TGA refill, you're getting potentially dollar up, which obviously reduces demand from the foreign central banks for U.S. assets. So all those things could actually, you know, could spur more bond market volatility if we're right that the resilient economy is likely to contribute to resilient inflation between now and then. And one final point I'll make on that, there is no time series history in the history of the core PCE time series of it breaking down substantially ahead of a recession. You always need to go through the recession to get to the actual disinflation process. So all of the disinflation we've seen in recent months and quarters has really just been removal of supply chain issues, you know, kind of, you know, unwinding of some of this fiscal largesse. But we're going to settle out, as we spoke earlier about this, we're going to settle out at a level of inflation that is significantly uncomfortable for the bond market, in our opinion, over the next, let's call it 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, so great distinction there with time frame. So your time frame really matters here. We talk about this in the academy. If you are medium term, that's what Darius was just drilling in on there. If you are longer term, then, you know, and you have that other view of the recession 6 to 9 months out, then maybe, but really judiciously and tactically, it sounds like on dips. But that's a really important distinction. Thank you for that, Darius. Sammy has a complicated question, but let's see if we can tackle it. Fed guy Joseph Wang believes Fed will continue QT on stage, but then buy treasuries behind the curtain once the debt ceiling deal is reached, and then TGA issues treasuries to market. Do you think bank reserves will be used to buy treasuries, or will the Fed buy them QE? I mean, I guess you have to agree with the idea that this will happen at all before you answer that question. I don't know. Have you been thinking about, I mean, it's sort of what happened before, right? Outward facing QT, but behind the scenes, or sort of like what the UK had to do when they had their gilt crisis. You see something like that coming down the pike?
No. The Fed has not been purchasing assets. The Fed has expanded its balance sheet vis-a-vis its emergency lending facilities. So we could see something like that. I certainly wouldn't rule that out. But certainly the Fed, I mean, this is a Federal Reserve that is failing on its inflation mandate by a factor of 2 to 3. They are nowhere near, at all, near administering quantitative easing and large-scale asset purchase program into this economic environment. I mean, we have to, and don't forget, the Federal Reserve, if you look at their last summary of economic projections in the month of March, we're gonna get the next one in June, but let's assume it's gonna be somewhere near the same. They're calling for 100 basis point backup, 110 basis point backup in the unemployment rate between now and the year end. So that's obviously probably going to come down, but they're going to push it out further into 2024, which ultimately means, irrespective of when it back out, you know, when it backs up, they're effectively calling for a mild recession, because there's never been a 100 basis point move higher in the unemployment rate that did not coincide with recession in the history of the U.S. economy. And so the likelihood that once asset markets are really starting to move to price in recessions, you know, consumer, investor, or household kind of, you know, liquidity preferences start to change when they get worried about losing their jobs, or, you know, their business not doing as well, you know, and the people start to rotate out of the equity market, the Fed is not going to be your friend in the early part of that movie. The Fed is going to be eating popcorn alongside me and our clients. Like, man, I told you so. This is coming. We need this pain to get back to a more sustainable and stable inflation environment that will allow the U.S. Treasury to capitalize itself at sustainable yields. Mm-hmm. Right now, if we let the inflation genie stay out of the bottle, we're going to go from negative 50-some basis points in term premium in the 10-year to probably plus 100 to 200, because, again, you have to price in that additional volatility that comes economically with higher levels of inflation.
Roger kind of asking a question along these lines. With the markets going up so much, why would the Fed ease?
Yeah, it's just, duh. Yeah, smart man. I don't have anything smart to add to that.
Maybe it was a rhetorical comment, but yeah. That doesn't do much to sort of help them, do the work for them. Achilles asking, what do you make of the concentrated rally, especially NVIDIA? We kind of talked before that it's not different this time, but do you see that as a risk that the equity rally is so concentrated in such a few names?
So not in isolation. I do see it as a risk today. In fact, this morning, our dispersion model, which was what we discussed earlier, actually triggered what we call a GTFO signal. So that's a tactical de-risk, degrowth signal before everyone else is forced to. Who knows how long that signal may last in terms of playing out. But this is not a structural call. It's more of like a next month or two, take down risk because of all the crowding that we're seeing into cyclicals and crowding out of defensives by an extreme degree. The crowding into defensives we're seeing from a sector and style factor perspective, and the crowding out of cyclicals, both to an extreme degree. Once we hit both extremes, that's when the signal is triggered. So I am concerned now. I was not concerned prior to this morning, because that's what always happens late stage, latter stages of the business cycle, which is industry concentration, the mega cap concentration. These companies are great at what they do. They can buy growth, they can buy back stock, they can increase their dividends, they can survive until the recession hits, whereas a lot of other companies are going to go by the wayside. And that's one final thing I'll make on this comment. Everyone thinks the recession is like this light switch that you turn on, we're all in recession. No, recession is a rolling series of events between households and businesses. The worst businesses, the most levered businesses, the businesses with the worst cyclical prospects are going to go into recession first. Same with the households who, people who spent the most money or had the most credit card debt are going to go into recession first. And the people who have been more prudent and the businesses that have better prospects will go into recession last. But eventually we'll all be in recession.
Andrew asking, does DD have any opinion on oil and gold before the arrival of recession?
Oil and gold. Gold is tricky. Oil, no real opinion. I mean, if we couldn't rally oil with China reopening, oil's going probably to 50. Let's be totally honest here. If you couldn't get oil to 90 with China reopening, it's going to 50. So I think that's an easy call. Gold is very difficult because historically, so you have some very big cross currents factoring into gold. Obviously the recession playbook, tends to say you want to be favoring gold assets like that. And then you also have, clearly what could potentially be more, these small regional bank, kind of crisis, if you will. The Fed is forced by market instability to kind of add more liquidity in the market. That's something that's been very supportive of Bitcoin, obviously, digital gold this year. So gold is in a tough spot from that perspective, because that makes sense. But we're talking about the potentiality of liquidity, a reduction in liquidity in the third quarter that could potentially spill over into the fourth quarter. I would not be buying gold here into that in the same way that I would not be buying bonds here into that. Really any asset, because most assets are correlated.
Bo was asking, is China's reopening really a nothing burger? Is it just that we're not going to see that sort of, bump to global activity because of the nature of the reopening and maybe the domestic focus of it? Or is it just a timing thing again? Is it just slower and longer to get ramped up than we anticipated?
Well, so in my opinion, and we can have our Real Vision Daily Briefing on this, but I will be brief. So there's three things that we called out back towards the beginning of the year in February. Specifically, we sold China back in February, and we called out. We said, hey, look, it doesn't look like they're going to stimulate from a fiscal perspective. We got that signal immediately after from the Party Congress, from outgoing Premier Li Keqiang, who outlined a very muted growth target, outlined a very tight fiscal deficit target, which told us these guys aren't going to hit the ground with shovel-ready projects in the way they've done in previous cycles. So that was kind of number one. Number two, China was in a structural liquidity trap in 2019 prior to COVID. This was an economy that was on its knees prior to COVID. And so reopening from COVID, you're going to get a level reset higher in activity, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to continue to accelerate, because again, this was an economy that was really struggling. And number three, the reason the economy was struggling is because of the debt overhang. You look at private non-financial sector debt in China, I think I want to say it's up around 220-230% to GDP. That number is like around 150 or 160 in the US. So these guys have gotten way over their ski tips from a private sector leverage perspective. And in my opinion, I think that's part of the reason President Xi is very reluctant to kind of, you know, turn the investment dial back up again, because ultimately they know all they're doing is sowing the seeds of a more deflationary kind of long-term destruction in that economy. So no, we kind of knew this was coming. I think everyone else is finding out in real time.
Last question, and it's from two different people, variations of it, both Jason and, excuse me, and Jay. Do you sell out of equities when the market gives you an option and hold cash and bonds? Jay was more worried about a risk to money market funds if the debt ceiling isn't resolved. But same question, is it risk management to remove funds, put them to cash temporarily until we're sorted? Is cash king?
You can't get enough cash. I've tried this. I tried to shoot a rap video at my bachelor party and I needed $10,000, and you can't even take $10,000 out of a bank. So no, you can't, you know, no, if you're a serious investor, you're probably not going to get enough cash. Look, this is what I'll say. If you're worried about your liquidity exposures in your portfolio, your cash, your T-bills, you know, however you manage your liquidity, you're missing the forest for the trees. Because if the US defaults, everything else in your portfolio will be limit down twice. So again, I'm not trying to dismiss the probability or dismiss the, you know, the risk of a technical default, but I do want everyone to understand that the risk is not to the T-bills that get defaulted on, the risk is to the global financial markets that could be limit down because the US, the base layer of money and collateral in the global financial system stopped making its payments on time. That is a much bigger risk. I want everyone to understand that.
And that is why Janet Yellen has been coming out and talking about catastrophe every single day and will continue to do so until the folks in Washington get something done.
Can I end on one, you know, public service announcement?
Yes.
And I always try to, you know, kind of, obviously we can talk finance and analytics all the time, but I think behavioral, this is the part of the game where the behavioral side is really important. When we talk bearishly and say, hey, recession's going to be here in Q4 or Q1 of next year, and you know, you got to, you know, be worried about, you know, big significant drawdown in the equity and digital asset markets and those things of the nature, we're not trying to get you to run out and sell things or short things. What we're primarily trying to do is to stop you from buying things towards or near the high, because the most hazardous thing that can happen to your wealth is buying something right before it goes down 20, 30, 40, or 50%. That's called volatility drag. You might recover substantially from those lows, but you will never compound the kinds of returns you could have compounded in the subsequent, you know, market cycle if you had just been more prudent with, you know, the time with which you kind of got all in the market. So I'm just trying to make sure people don't go all in at the wrong time.
Don't get sucked into it. And it's often, you know, individual investors and those of us who are trying to grow our nest eggs.
Hedge fund guys do it too. They do it too.
Exactly. Darius, fantastic stuff today. So appreciate you. Thank you. I think it's a really, you know, people tend to think, well, stocks and bonds can't be right, so someone's right. But, you know, this is a really good cautionary note that we could be in for a tricky time where you can get caught out as we make this transition, because timing is everything. So thank you for that.
Of course. Thank you, Maggie. Always a pleasure to be here, and love the Real Vision audience. You guys are doing great work.
Yeah, thank you so much. And great, great questions today. I say that a lot, but honestly, you are the smartest audience in the universe. We'll be back same time tomorrow. Raul's going to be here with me for an AMA. It's extended. We're going to switch the extended from Friday to Thursday so we can squeeze in as many questions as possible. And Darius is going to have a session with Raul coming up in a couple of weeks as well.
On the second, yep.
There may or may not be beverages. I'm not sure. We're working on that. But we have some ideas. But yeah, definitely tune in tomorrow and come armed with your questions. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll see you then. In the meantime, as always, take care and good luck out there.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.